This afternoon, we'd like to look at the subject of cultivating a love for learning in elementary grades. I guess, as I started this introduction in the notebook, what sparked your love for learning? And probably as we look at things, there might be different things that somehow got you and me interested in learning. And maybe it was something that happened at school. Maybe it was something that happened before you ever went to school. And what struck you? What got you learning, or taking an interest in learning? I really don't know what got me involved in learning interest. I believe it was one of the things was books. I had parents who didn't mind paying a little bit of money for books. Possibly there was also, I had a grandfather that had been a school teacher as a young man, and those kind of things. And so there were things in my life that somehow sparked an interest in learning in me. I will say this, though, and not to make a sob story, that my elementary school years, by and large, were not the kind of environments where I would have found learning to be something that I wanted to do. If I would look at, basically, my elementary school years, teaching would be the thing furthest from what I would intend to do. And not that it was horrible, but it was next to it. It's not that I didn't learn, but like I say, the setting and so on was not a conducive, healthy environment for learning. At least mine wasn't. I hope yours was. But this afternoon we'd like to look at some very basic things, and hopefully we can even take some practical things from here, is what is there that we can do to somehow spark the learning in a child. We do have those children who come to our schools and they just more or less, they sit there and says, just you make me, you know. Try to make me learn. I'm not interested, or some have a bit the idea I'm going to be in neutral, and you have to somehow get me into drive and see what's going to happen. That's always a teacher's challenge. Actually, it can be interesting. I still remember, this was in a particular area, I had a boy in school, his name was Willie. He's not a married man, but Willie had some issues. Willie, I think they said, was ADHD. I don't really know. It's not that I don't believe in those kind of things, but I'm a little hesitant to throw those kind of labels around too quickly. Willie definitely was a challenge in school. Willie started school that way. In fact, even before Willie ever came to school, I already knew that we'd have some issues with Willie in school. I had Willie for a number of years as a student, and I'll probably refer to Willie a number of times because Willie was one of those kind of students who we had to cultivate learning. I don't know if we ever cultivated a love for learning, but we had to definitely cultivate learning. But I still remember the day Willie was in junior high, probably about 7th, 8th grade, somewhere in there. And we were going to practice for a program. And I was going to have my junior and senior high fellows, young men, sing. Willie was not a singer. Singing was a ladies' thing. Okay? Men don't sing. And I had a group of boys in that age bracket that more or less thought a little bit like that. I had some older boys in the 11th and 12th and so on. grade level area who didn't mind singing. They were young fellows who had were converted. They were part of the church, and they enjoyed singing. But then I had some of these younger ones that were really not that interested. And so I says, okay, I'm going to send the young ladies. They're going to go way out the other end of the building in the gymnasium. And one of my sister teachers is going to work with them singing. And I'm going to work with these young men. And so we started. And I start off right away. It says, now this is a men's chorus. And some of you are going to sing baritone. And some of you are going to sing first tenor and bass. And we're actually going to have some singers that are going to sing lead. We didn't use the word soprano. And of course, I knew that these seventh grade boys, you know, they're not at that stage yet. They didn't know music well enough that I could use them for. They all want to sing bass because that's a man's thing. I still remember we hadn't, and Willie was the kind of boy more just, you know, make me. And we got down to singing, just fellows in the room. After a while, Willie looked at me and he says, Mr. Peters, this is fun. Wow, score. I still remember the day Willie didn't enjoy reading very much. But I found out that there are certain themes that Willie really liked. Anything with wild animals, and the wilder the better. And anything with Indians, the wilder the better. And I still remember the day we were reading in a reader a story about some fox or wolf, or I'm not sure what it was, some story about this. And it was a long story, so it was in several sections. And I said we were going to read part of the story today. And I had a bit of a rule. They could not read further, okay? Because it was a class. And so we read part of the story, and today I says, we're going to take up the rest of it next time. And Willie raises his hand and says, Mr. Peters, may I finish the story? And that was like music to a teacher's ears. And I just broke my own rule, and I says, Willie, you may. I was not going to let something like that drop. And we did get a reader out of Willie, eventually. Not gung-ho reader, but it's those kind of things. How do we cultivate somewhat of a desire, an interest, a love for learning? Some children more or less come to school and it's there. Some children come to school and it vanishes. And some come to school and we have to somehow try to work to see if we can get it there. Now, how do we do that? I think there's some basic concepts, and one is factors that involve you and me as a teacher. One important thing is, how do we feel about students? You know the story of Helen Keller. Would there have been a Helen Keller, the way we know Helen Keller, if there hadn't been an Ansel? I don't think so. I really don't think so. There was a lady there that took an interest, that had a deep concern, and that was willing to dedicate herself to helping this blind, mute individual. And she took an interest in having not only teaching her, but in having a relationship. And I know some of these things I'm saying are very, very basic. But, you know, if you develop relationships with your children, students, and it can be at any age, but relationships will go such a long way. I remember a school teacher that we had, and I don't know if I should use names or not. Some of you may know this young man. He started teaching in our school. And when I first met him, I thought to myself, I don't know. This doesn't look like too much teacher material. This young man started teaching our school, and things went from bad to worse. And by Christmas time, we had some real, real disastrous things happening. And so we, as a school administration, got together, and we talked to this teacher, and the teacher says, I realize this. I've let things go far too far. And I'm willing to, at Christmas time, step back and quit teaching. He says, I don't want to leave you people in a lurch, but I don't either want to contribute to a problem and maintain a problem that I helped make. We told this young man, he says, no, that we don't think is going to be the issue. If you're going to work with us and you allow us to work with you, I think we can make this thing work. And so the administration stepped into class first thing after Christmas and took some drastic actions there. I mean, not drastic, but just stepped down on some things. And the teacher knew this, and he was willing to work with it. You ask my daughter who her favorite teacher was. She'd say Luke. He stayed for another 2 years. And he had a relationship with the students that pretty well the students could, he would say jump, and the only question they'd ask was how high. I still remember the time he told me, he says, Pete, I want to do a special project with the students. It was quite a detailed project. And I says, Luke, he says, that looks like something rather big. Is that going to work? Will you have the time for it? Is it going to take to so much class time that other basic studies are going to get neglected, or that there's going to be too much homework? He says, no, that's not how it's going to work. We'll work this, that this becomes something they want to do after their work is done. And those students did some excellent projects. I still remember that. It was probably one of the highlights of his teaching there. But he had a lot of enthusiasm, but he had a lot of relationship. He had a lot of relationship. Now, you have to, In doing relationship with your students, you have to do it with the kind of person you are. Okay? You can't do it the way I do it or the way somebody else does. You have to do it the way you are. Because it has a lot to do with our personality. But definitely take an interest in having relationship with your students. Be a nurturer, a discipler. Discipleship has a beginning, it never has an end. Disciples, if they're properly taught, eventually become disciplers. People are more responsive if they know that I care enough about them that they will then take time to listen and learn. If they only sense that I want to shut them up so that I can voice my knowledge, I really hamper genuine communication with them. And so, As you work with your students, that your students get to see you, and you get to see them. I believe that's why 11 of the 12 disciples became so effective that Christ had. Because the whole concept of nurturing. Now, we as teachers can't do that the way Jesus did. I mean, those disciples, they lived with him, they walked with him, they were just part of his total daily experience. I think we're glad when our students leave at 3:30 and say, oh, we'll see you tomorrow morning, but I have a bit of free time. See, Jesus didn't do that necessarily with his. But they knew exactly how Jesus thought. They knew how he taught. And Jesus knew exactly what they were like. And, you know, but they started feeling comfortable with each other and relating to each other, but I believe it's those things that made such an effective difference in those men, because they were nurtured. They weren't only informed. They were nurtured people. They were mentored. And I think it's a powerful statement that Acts gives, that when these when was it Peter and John were before the Sanhedrin, those men says, we know that you have been with Jesus. We can tell exactly where you were. No mistake who your teacher was. That's a powerful statement. And I think that's a tribute to any teacher when other people say about your students, we know who taught you. That is a tribute. That is a tribute. That something has carried over, that there's been an influence. Okay, and then, of course, as you take an interest in your students, you're going to take an interest in what your students are interested in and what they would like to learn. Not only what they would like to learn, but in the ways in which it will be captivating to them. And so you become very student focused. And as your students sense that, they will take an interest in what you're saying. They will take an interest in the things that interest you. So your attitude toward them. I know of teachers. I get into quite a few different settings. I work with people in Mexico and so on, some of them excellent, but I know of some teachers. I have seen some of those teachers. They didn't even manage school. They were there. But there was no relationship. There was no relationship. You can inform, possibly, but you can't teach. Not like that. And so your relationship, your interest in students, your love for students. I do a fair bit of teacher training with Christian Light. I've told quite a few of my trainees, it says, if you don't love children, please don't teach. Please don't. Because it'll be horrible for you and for them if you're going to try. Second, another factor of the teacher is your attitude, your skill in teaching. Now, some of those things can be learned. Some of those things are just part of us. To provide variety, creativity, to do things, to plan things that, how should I say? So that you're going to get taught what needs to, that the basics are done well, and yet there's a little bit of time left for dessert. Children are children not only at the meal, at the table, they're also children in school. You know, and we have children, I mean, ours are grown up now, we have a little grandson. Sometimes, if we want, he understands already that in order for me to get this, I have to do this. Because there's some basics that need to be taken care of, food-wise. And school the same way. That creativity is the sparkler. That variety is the sparkler. But it should not become the basic. And I know many teachers. They are extremely creative. And they come up with new things. I walk into classrooms that make me totally jealous. How do these teachers ever do these things? And how do they ever find time for all this? And yet, they get all the basics done. That is so great. But I know it's also well-meaning of teachers to do a lot of creative things and yet miss out on the standard basic things that students are supposed to learn. It's easy to do fun things and miss out on foundational. It is. Dessert is important, it shouldn't become the meat and potatoes. So as you provide interesting things, contests, special activities, all that creativity, And sometimes it doesn't have to be big or long or very involved. I still remember teaching one year, and just, you know, it was getting close to Christmas time, or was it? No, it was after Christmas. I brought something to school. Now, I couldn't have it standing there very long because I would have had students who wouldn't get any basics done. I found this recipe, and probably many of you know what it is, where you mix vinegar and I think it's a bit of soda. No. Anyway, you put mothballs in it. And then these mothballs, they rise and sink, you know. And it has to do because of the chemical reactions and they cling to the mothball and then the rises and then the air lets go and then they fall again, you know, and then they rise up and down like this. And those students were just intrigued by watching that. So much so I had to finally put it away because that's all that they wanted to do all day. So you have those students that enjoy looking at the ruler and not using it. And this is the kind of thing I had. But it sure sparked, you know, it does something. To provide something interesting, special activity. Even your recesses, how do you cultivate a love for learning? I believe having breaks that are meaningful. Some schools, and I don't know what yours is like, have a bit the idea that break is exactly that. It's break. It's a break for the teacher. It's a break for the student. Everybody does his own thing. It's totally my time. I guess I've taken, maybe I'm too hard-nosed of a teacher, I've taken the approach that break is a class. It's a class on interpersonal relationships. It's a class on getting along with others. It's a class on good sportsmanship. It's a class, it's a little more relaxed. It's a little, not quite as structured, but it's a class. It's a break, but it's a class. And how can that cultivate a love for learning? I'll tell you of two examples. When I started teaching, I guess I had to learn some things the hard way. And students, these were maybe a little older than elementary, but they just hang around, just, you know, for 15 minutes, then they go back into class. But they had lost no energy. They had not transferred any energy. They had come out of class tired, and they went back into class with somewhat of a sour attitude very often. Mm. And so when we started the recess as a class mentality, this was at a different school. It was a brand new school. All these children came from public school. We didn't have a gym. We didn't have all those nice things. In fact, we had very little sport equipment of any kind. That first winter, and this was in Manitoba, and it gets cold there. We had 30 below. We'd go outside to play, because where else would we play? And so we bundled up and we went outside and played. And we had all forms of tag. I don't know how many kinds of tag we had. And 24 children, and we played tag. Little ones and big ones. Students loved nothing better than when Big Bill was the fellow that was the tagger. The one that was it. Tall guy. Long legs. Because he could look around that 1 acre lot. Where is that teacher? And I could run wherever I wanted to and he'd catch me. Students loved to see it. But I had a bit the mentality. I never told him. He says, Bill, you chase me outside. I chase you inside. We'd have a good recess time. But those students were excited. We had a good time. We could go back inside. And Bill was willing to learn. He was willing to learn. Even those it was a diversion, but it helped our classroom approach. It did. Okay, number 2C, we better move on before we get caught with being too late. Inspire rather than inform. Let students discover, achieve. Now, I know I'm lecturing here, and maybe we should have discussion. You know, there's a place that we still need to be developing question marks in students' lives of things that are not fully answered yet, things that they still want to inquire about more, things where they're not satisfied that I know enough. And that happens as we teach with a sense of interest. It does. Of course, our personality, we've talked a bit about that. Are you willing to be a student? Say, I don't have time to learn. Poor students, if we teachers aren't willing to learn. Do we take an interest in learning? I don't have this, but somebody said that somebody developed a list called Books Teachers Should Read. Maybe we could take time. What are books that you feel a teacher should read for whatever interest? Either just as personal, inspirational, or as actually how-to kind of things. What are books that you feel are important to have? That should be important reading, could be important or influential reading material to a teacher.
One book that I have appreciated a lot is the book by I think it's by Bruce Wilkinson.
Bruce Wilkinson? Laws of the Learner. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's a book that I have read, or at least heard this series of tapes or something on that quite a few years ago. Good information. Yes. Thank you. Some other books.
Love Languages for Children.
Okay. Love Languages for Children. Mm-hmm. Good. Others. Somebody suggested a while ago you have to read Cheaper by the Dozen. Any other books?
There's some books by Mary McCracken. She worked with students who had difficulties, different experiences, and
Okay, Mary McCracken is an author that's had a number of books. I haven't read her books. I've heard of some of them. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure that you know there are many books around, and of course, some of our reading interests are not all the same. It may even be in a certain area of study, like history. You know, one teacher especially enjoys that. Another one, science, or math, or classic literature, or whatever. But be an example of learning, because it's those things that you take interest in, and as your cup gets full, it's going to just go over. Okay. And those things that excite you, those things that you find interesting, that's what's going to spill over onto your students. And so as you are learning and your cup gets full, it'll go over. And whatever you are filled up with to the brim, it will spill if it gets bumped. And so as you are interested in learning, your students will pick up those things. They will find, our students will soon notice the difference between what we need to teach them and what we enjoy teaching them. They pick up on that very quickly. There are those things that we teach because it's part of the course. It's part of the scope. It's the necessary, you know. And so we teach it. We try our best. We try to do with a sense of enthusiasm. But it's those spontaneous, those things of interest that almost, that come without it becoming a structured, planned thing. It just spills over. It just does. And it's those kind of things that likely our students are going to pick up on, that they will develop a love for. They will, because they see it in us. I'll give you an example out of just personal life. I grew up detesting liver. I couldn't stand the stuff. The taste was okay yet. It's the texture of the stuff. I just couldn't get it that it would go the right direction. It was awful. I tried all I wanted to and it just did not work. Until I had my own children, I found out my children don't eat liver because Dad doesn't. And I knew that this is good food. Before you have cholesterol problems. And so I decided, Pete has got to learn to eat this stuff. And so he did. It took a lot of bacon and onions and ketchup. But between those three, we learned to eat liver. To the point where today, I'll order it in a restaurant because I enjoy it. You think, ooh, well that, try it. I'm living proof. But you know, my youngest son, he's 20 now, but when he was just a little boy, he had a craving for candy. We had a watch, but the whole candy thing. Most children will have that. But he just loved candy. But if I would have told him, Jaden, here's a fistful of candy, and here's a fistful of liver. You can have one fistful. That boy would have had one awful time deciding what he was going to take. I don't think that would have happened had he never seen his daddy enjoy liver. Okay? So there's those things that when your cup runs over, that's what your students will catch. That's what they will catch. Okay, so be a positive person. Have attainable expectations. Give them a chance to develop. But at the same time, teachers, be yourself. The sad thing is that we often try to follow some mentor. And that's important. But we try to follow some mentor in ways that are not our personalities, okay? And that doesn't work. I think we can learn from each other, but we still have to make teaching such that it becomes comfortable to who we are. And that's going to spill over into our students. Okay, we got to go on. Factors in the students. What can we do to cultivate a love for learning considering the student himself? Well, first of all, his attitude about himself makes a difference. And also, where he fits into the group of students that he's with. They are going to either encourage learning or discourage learning. If you have a classroom that has a lot of tension, if you have students that don't get along, that are picked on, that are always at the bottom of the totem pole, socially, you and I can likely expect that learning will not be something that they will do with great relish. Very often they won't. Because of these external factors that are around them. His attitudes toward the teacher, of course, will be reflected a lot in your attitudes toward him. And of course, his attitudes toward learning himself. Maybe some of his previous experiences as a student. And he comes to your class and he's not had a good learning experience. And so he doesn't really love learning. He'd rather not be there. Some of those things, I mean, you have to work with what came into your class. You can't do anything about what happened. It becomes you and your and my responsibility to see what we can do about making a change, making a difference. I don't know how many of you have ever read the book, I forget the title, by Guy Dowd. He was the Teacher of the Year in the 90s one year. I had an opportunity to meet Mr. Dowd. Interesting man. Very interesting man. Walking, he has quite a bit of difficulty physically, and so he was using canes to walk. But he was a man full of inspiration. He just was. And he told us a story of when he had been a school teacher. And he had taught for many years, and I think he was still teaching at that time, or maybe he wasn't anymore. Christmas Eve, he got a phone call. And the person said, "I am so-and-so," identified who he was. "And I used to be one of your students." One year, he had him in a class. It was a public school class. And Guy was faintly remembered who this young man was. He says, "I'm in prison. And every Christmas Eve, we have an opportunity to make one call to wish somebody a Merry Christmas. And I chose you." And he says, "Why did you choose me?" Says, "Mr. Dowd, because you were a person in my life who made a difference, who cared." Wow. The boy didn't have good experiences after. He hadn't had good experiences before. And there are some factors that we can't do much about. But the factors, your children come to school and with certain things that will influence whether they will enjoy learning or whether they won't. And some of them we can do something about. Sometimes we can make the difference. I would say this with many of our students, and I don't know what it is, maybe the times which we live where there's a lot more of activity, even in the technological world, very few people enjoy being involved in doing things that are very tedious. Okay. And teachers, sometimes we can get rather tedious. I'm not saying that we shouldn't do basic things. But even basic things somehow need to be done in a way that they don't become monotonous and tedious and just boring. In fact, I worked with a teacher. She did not allow the word boring. She said boredom is a choice. And really it is. But we as teachers need to, you know, provide enough, how should I say, spark, that it doesn't just become an endless, monotonous exercise. And there's a fine line between doing the routine, regular, normal, and it not becoming something mundane and repetitious. And so these are students' factors. On the next page, of course, his home environment makes a difference too. And I know you and I as teachers, we can't always do too much about that. But yes, we can. I have seen homes change their mentality about learning just by good interactions between the teacher and the parent. Mm-hmm. It can make a difference. And you don't have to go there and pound information into these parents' heads. We don't. But as they as you and they relate, and they see, again, and they see the things that are important to you, they sense your heartbeat, and they get sparked by it, that's going to carry over into the lives of their children. It will. And it has, I guess, one of the main things that I'm talking about this afternoon, teachers, is relationship. It has to do with relationship. And yes, parents have their part to do, and as parents send their children to your school, you have a chance to influence them, hopefully. And there are some things that you just have to work around. And sometimes your love for learning, in the child's love for learning, is hampered by these external conditions. Let's look lastly at factors in the learning situation itself. What can cultivate a love for learning? The spirit in your class. It's hard to identify, but every classroom seems to have some kind of a spirit. And it's different things that make up that spirit. It's a teacher. It's a student. It's the curriculum. It's even the physical environment. It's all those things. They somehow help pull together, make for a class spirit environment, whatever that is. I remember just recently within this last year, being in a school in Oklahoma. It had been an old little two-room public school. Real neat old building. And the And so then they had tried to make this thing a little bit more efficient. And so they had high ceilings. They brought the ceilings down to only about 8 feet, stuff like that, and done some things. And, of course, they had big windows. And they had covered up a lot of the windows and maybe just not done the most artistic job with it, let's put it that way. And, you know, and so it became a learning environment for students. Let's say it became an environment. Just recently I was in that school, and there have been some changes going on there. And so they had again made that ceiling like it used to be and put in new windows, big windows, and so that it had some of its original character. And they had a different teacher, and in fact, two teachers, and it was amazing to see what was happening at that school. The spirit that was there, it was different. There's a lot of things that bring about class spirit. It has something to do with when the student and the teacher both feel, this is where I belong. This is home. And I'm comfortable here. This is a place of security. And I can be myself. They're positive, optimistic, comfortable with each other. And so your class spirit situation is going to have a factor in how well students will learn. This is even such things as your physical environment, atmosphere. Is it an inviting place? And I don't think I have to say too much about that to a group of teachers that are likely very creative, probably spending most of the summer getting all kinds of bulletin boards and whatever already. so that they got it all fixed for next year. Those things are important. They help cultivate a love for learning. They do. The class size, how much help the teacher is able to give to the students, all those things are variables that contribute to whether a student likes to learn or doesn't. And of course, how well you and I as teachers prepare. The kind of teacher we are, the discipline that we take ourselves to study our lessons, to have schedules, to grade tests orderly, to have good lesson introductions, to tell appropriate stories, to good use illustrations, to have meaningful activity, and all that helps cultivate learning. And then, of course, lastly, motivate. It's when these other things, teachers, it's when these other things are in motion, then motivation somehow doesn't need a lot of motivation. It somehow becomes the icing that you just put on top, the sprinkles you put on the icing. Not even really the icing itself. Because these other things already do a lot of the cultivating on their own. But if you don't have many of these other factors, or these factors are working against you, then motivation becomes a very hard lot. And it's effort the whole way. And you really still don't get what you really, really want. Encouragement makes such a difference. And I would encourage you, teachers, commend the group. I know we're going to be talking about in a general session here sometime yet too. The whole matter of teamwork. School, yes, there is such a thing as healthy competition. But more and more, as a teacher, I'm seeing it that healthy teamwork works a lot better than healthy competition does. I'm not saying competition has no place. It does. But, you know, healthy teamwork is healthier than healthy competition. Commend progress. Commend effort. I know in our school, students, if they finish a test, they get a star. And according to the grade they receive, that's the kind of star they get. It always pleases everybody when you can put on a gold one. But I know I've had students, they worked harder for a red star, which was the lowest passing one, and those who got the gold. Okay? And sometimes I had students who didn't even get a red star, who probably worked harder for the grade they did get. Teachers, sometimes it's easy for us to forget that. Okay? Commendation goes so far. I still remember as a young boy, this is not school related, I heard my father give a commendation about me or some good word about me to some other man. I went on that steam for weeks. Not true, I think our commendation should be sincere. But some people have the idea, well, you'll spoil them if you commend them. If we flatter them, we will. Then we will. Honest commendation is something that everybody needs. A good dose of. A good dose of. So commend their progress. Commend their effort. Commend their accomplishment. Commend those things that a student is responsible for. Sometimes things, you know, it's easy to say, boy, you are cute. Child has nothing to do about it. It's just the way they are. But do we commend the things that where the student can do something about? Cultivating a love for learning. We could look into many other ways, probably. I'd like to close, and I'd like to just underline again. A lot of it has to do with how you and I relate to students. I remember going to school, and I remember quite a few of my teachers that I had. Of course, I don't remember all my high school teachers. It was a public high, and so I had a lot of them. There's actually not too many things that I remember individual teachers teaching me. But there's one thing I remember about most of my teachers is the kind of person they were and the difference they made in my life. Okay? Teachers, that's what your students are going to say about you and me. We may think it's important that they learn how to do algebra and fractions and diagramming sentences and correct spelling. And those things are important. All right? I don't want to downplay them at all. Because those are necessary skills. But those skills will only likely be effective when the surrounding of those skills is going to be the kind of person who you are that is conducive to making an influence and a difference in those academic ways as well. Cultivating a love for learning. I'm blessed that some students have it. And all you have to do is just, you know, feed it on. And it becomes a challenge when we have students who more or less give you a bit the eye, try it. But yes, there is that blessing, teachers, when you have students who somehow come back to you. And I've had that blessing just recently. Talked to some students that I had 20-some years ago in teaching who came back to me now, and they say, I wish... We're good friends. Says, now I see the value of what you were trying to say. Now I see it. At that time, it didn't make sense. Now it makes a difference. So cultivate a love for learning in them, because school basically is not where they do their learning. School is basically where we get the keys to what life is all about, a learning experience. Thanks, your excuse.